Thank you for joining us here on News Radio KMAN. Brandon Peoples joined here today by Chris Kobach, former Secretary of State, and he's currently a candidate for the 2020 Senate race. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
Great to be here in Manhattan.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. Speaking engagement Monday for you, speaking with the K-State Young Republicans. What's your message you're trying to convey to them?
Well, that it's a really important race coming up in 2020. Not only is the president on the ballot, but we've got an open U.S. Senate seat in Kansas, and that doesn't happen very often. And, of course, there's a lot going on in the political world, to say the least, right now. And I wanted to fire up the college Republicans and talk about some of the issues.
And, you know, first of all, getting motivated here to run again. I know you had a bitter race last year running for governor. That didn't end the way you wanted it to here, but then you jump into the Senate race this year. Well, I guess what motivated you?
Well, you know, the main factor motivating me is that this country is at a turning point right now. I think most people, whether they be liberal or conservative, Republican or Democrat, you know, would look at this upcoming election in 2020 as a real turning point in terms of whether the president stays in office, whether the U.S. Senate continues to support him, because at this point, of course, the Senate is pretty narrowly divided. And it's a critical election. And I think, you know, as much as running two races in a row is not much fun because it's so grueling and so tiring to do it, I felt as if I sat this one out and then as an old man looked back and said, wow, things might have been different if I'd have run in 2020, I would have regretted it. And there's just so much that needs to get done. So I decided I'm going to have to put on my campaigning shoes and get serious about it again, because there's a lot that needs to be done.
You know, the two parties are so polar opposite right now. There's so much deep division, and there's not a lot of room in the middle. Why do you think it's gravitated so much on both sides?
You know, that's a really good question. I mean, it's not something that just happened with Donald Trump. This was already happening for years before 2016. Being a Republican, maybe I look at it from a slight bias, but I do think that the Democrats have gone further left than the Republicans have gone right. In other words, if you look at the things that we stand for in the Republican Party, we've been standing for life, you know, the pro-life position on abortion for decades. We've been standing for strong defense for decades. We've been the party that's more inclined to cut taxes and to help businesses grow for as long as I've been alive. So I don't think anything we've done is – our movement has been as significant as the movement on the Democrats, who are now openly advocating socialism. I mean, that's not even a dirty word anymore in their party. They are saying that they want to abolish ICE, that they think open borders are the way to go. I think that – you know, honestly, they've been moving left more than we have been moving right. We've been pretty much standing for the traditions of this country and standing for our Constitution. So I think that's part of it. And I don't know. There's been a disappearance in American politics of the kind of the quintessential moderate, the conservative Democrat. You don't see as many of those anymore, and you don't see as many of the liberal Republicans. And a lot of it is a state by state issue. Each Senate race is different, whether it's in Kansas or whether it's in you pick the other state.
Well, one of the issues I know you've been very vocal about, we hear a lot about in the news, is on illegal immigration and ending that.
Yes.
That starts, obviously, at the border. But as we've seen the last 2 years, that's no easy task. What is, in your mind, the right solution?
Well, a number of things. One is we absolutely have to complete the physical barriers. We have to complete the wall. You know, one thing many listeners may be aware of is that for the past 9 months, I've been working as general counsel for We Build the Wall. And in the summer, we completed the first section of privately built border barrier in American history. Never been done before. Privately built on private land on the U.S.-Mexico border. And we did it to a standard that was even higher than the standard that the U.S. government was building to. That's a real achievement. A lot of people say, hey, you know what? That's a good, we need to do this because there's so much. The border is 1,933 miles long. We only have right now a little over 100 miles that will stop pedestrian traffic of wall built. So there's such a huge job it's going to require. The federal government is going to require private entities. And for me, having actually constructed the barrier there and been there on the ground for so many months or so many weeks cumulatively, I've seen what needs to be done on the border. And I think as a U.S. senator, I will be able to, question the bureaucrats who come up and say, oh, you can't really build a wall there. And I'll be able to say, actually, you can. For example, the Army Corps of Engineers in the area that we build the wall built, they said that terrain was too steep to build, and that's why they left that gap open. We came in and built it where they said it couldn't be done, and as a result, we stopped a huge drug smuggling corridor. So I think it's important to have real experience. And of course, I've litigated immigration laws for the past 20 years as well, and that's important to actually know the loopholes in the law that need to be fixed. There are loopholes in our asylum law that are being abused by the caravans. We've got to have a U.S. senator who gets in there and says, I know exactly what words need to be changed in U.S. law, not someone who comes in as a novice on illegal immigration and says, I don't know, somebody tell me what to do. I know very specifically what needs to be done, and we need to get to work right away. And also, someone needs to carry the ball for the president. I mean, right now, there's nobody in the U.S. Senate who is really pushing forward hard with the Trump agenda on immigration.
All right. Again, we're speaking with former Secretary of State Chris Kobach. He's a senatorial candidate for 2020 on the Republican side. There's always a yeah, but here with the border issue. And, you know, I think most people agree we don't want drugs coming in. We don't want criminals coming into the country. There's always the cases, though, that there's children that come in with families, maybe escaping persecution from other places. What do you suggest in terms of a vetting process to ensure that, you know, children especially aren't caught in the middle and aren't negotiating pieces in this argument?
Well, two things. One is that we have to disincentivize the bringing and the exploitation of children. This is something relatively new. We've only seen it in the last couple of years. And it was actually caused by Barack Obama's DACA amnesty, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. He created this executive amnesty, which the court struck down. It's going now to the U.S. Supreme Court, but various courts have looked at it and said he couldn't do this. Anyway, that caused an incentive for people to start bringing children because they thought, oh, wait, if the kids get to stay, maybe I get to stay with them. That was the assumption in Central American countries. And then the Obama administration further said, well, we're going to abide by this Flores Agreement settlement, and I won't get into the nitty-gritty legal details, which the Obama administration could have resolved by regulation, and the Trump administration finally has. And that said to all of the people thinking about coming north from these countries, if you bring a kid with you, they won't be able to put you in detention for more than 20 days. So they're going to turn you loose into the United States if you have a child. Created a huge incentive for what? For people to bring kids. And it got even worse because now we know that a large percentage of the adults with a child in their custody are not related to the child because the Department of Homeland Security did some rapid DNA testing in one of the border sectors, found a significant percentage of these kids were not related at all. They were either rented from the families or abducted from the families and used. And so U.S. policy, starting with Obama and now continuing into the present, has given an incentive for the bringing of children, the abuse of children, and you've got to have people in the U.S. Senate who understand that and who bring that to an end. And so, yeah, we have got to disincentivize the bringing of children. The Trump administration has already done some things to move us along that path, but Congress can seal the deal by tightening up some of the wording of U.S. law.
All right. Interesting to see how that all takes shape here. It's an issue that's not going away anytime soon.
No, the illegal immigration issue has been around for a long time. And, you know, having been in this, worked in this field for two decades, I know some things that can be fairly simply done, but you just got to have somebody in the U.S. Senate pushing for it.
What about in terms of some of your other policies that you're pushing for here? Restoring the Constitution, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think many people who are serious about the Constitution and respect the U.S. Constitution know that in many areas of constitutional law that the original Founding Fathers' version and vision of the Constitution isn't what we have today. The Supreme Court has hollowed it all out over the years, and it needs to be restored. And one perfect example of an area that's in flux right now is the Second Amendment. Our Second Amendment rights hang by the vote of one justice on the Supreme Court. If President Trump loses, there is a very high likelihood that that our Second Amendment protections would be evaporated one or two judicial nominations from now. So having someone in the U.S. Senate who understands these doctrines, I also taught constitutional law for 15 years at UMKC School of Law at the beginning of my career. And you need someone who understands it. When you see the hearings, where whether it's a Supreme Court nominee or an appellate court nominee, and the senators ask these questions, and you can tell that somebody wrote the question for the senator, because he'll ask the question, he'll get a sort of an indecisive or an unclear answer, and he won't know what the follow-up question is. I do know what those questions are, because I think you have to have a constitutional conservative senator who will hold the line and will oppose any nominee who isn't strictly abiding by what the founding fathers intended when they wrote our Constitution.
Anytime we have a mass shooting, we always hear this issue come back up again here, that, you know, oh, we need to have more tighter gun laws. What is your opinion on that?
My opinion is that the people on the left who are calling for universal background checks either don't know what they're talking about or they're intentionally lying. For example, both the El Paso and the Dayton shooter passed background checks. So expanding background checks to law-abiding people like us, when we want to, you know, transfer a gun, if I want to hand a gun to my my daughter, or buy a gun from my father-in-law, or whatever, these Democrat bills are proposing to make those transfers very difficult, because you'd have to go down to a gun store, pay somebody to run a background check when you know the person perfectly well. And so anyway, the Democrat proposals are, you know, they're trying to exploit these tragedies to pass gun control laws that would have done nothing to stop the tragedies, but meanwhile would really interfere with our Second Amendment rights for the rest of us. So I am opposed to what the Democrats have been proposing in terms of gun control, and I'm not afraid of saying that. I think some members of Congress are just – they're so afraid of saying this or that because they're afraid they might offend somebody. Well, look, I don't care. I will say very clearly that what the Democrats are proposing is nonsense. It infringes on our Second Amendment rights, and it would do nothing to stop mass shootings in the future.
Do you think there's a lot of politicians who do kind of walk that tightrope? They don't want to offend folks.
Oh yeah, I mean it's one of the biggest problems in politics. You have politicians who try to please everybody. So if you ask them a question in a radio interview, and they give you this mealy-mouthed answer that kind of answers the question, but kind of sounds good to everybody, then the listener is scratching his head, saying, "I'm not really sure where he stands." Look, that's not me. I am someone who will tell you what I think, and I'll tell you what I'm going to do. And if you don't like it, then don't vote for me. But I think it's refreshing for voters to have a clear perspective on where the guy or the gal stands.
We had one of your opponents in here the other day, just kind of talking about the race. He's also Congressman Marshall is the opponent. He's voted 98% with Trump on issues. How would you say you are as far as your relationship with the president?
I've known President Trump for a long time. I was the only Kansas statewide or congressional officer who endorsed President Trump in the primary in 2016. And of course, I continue to advise President Trump. You know, I think Congressman Marshall and I, we on a lot of things we may agree, but there are some where we disagree. He has said that he doesn't think border walls are feasible. I'm actually building border walls. He voted against a bill that would cut by 1% federal spending in all non-defense areas. I would have voted for that amendment. So I think on issues like cutting spending and on issues like getting serious on illegal immigration, I think there's a clear choice for voters, and hopefully that choice will be plain to them, and they'll be able to say which version they want of a Republican senator.
We're a little bit more than a year away. What's next for you here in the next few weeks?
Traveling all over the state, meeting with people, meeting with the K-State College Republicans today. And, you know, it's important for Kansans to get a chance to shake hands with someone who wants to represent them in the U.S. Senate. It's an incredibly important position. And I think in my particular case, Kansans know my conservative record and know that I don't back down. And I think a lot of them, you know, a lot of people have come up to me and said, "Hey, I really appreciate all that you've stood for over the years." And that's important for me too to hear, because, you know, a lot of times the more liberal media outlets will be throwing slings and arrows at you. It's good when Kansans can say, "Hey, I want you to keep it up," and other Kansans can meet me all around the state and ask me questions. And that's the way the system's supposed to work.
All right. Well, we appreciate you coming out and talking with us here on K-Man, and good luck to you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And that's Chris Kobach, former Secretary of State and 2020 senatorial candidate.